Just a heads up, in this episode, we will be referring to the stories and experiences from the previous episode, episode 36, The Lizzie Borden House. So, if you have not yet listened to that episode, we suggest doing so before proceeding with this one. Hello and welcome to the Brothers Mysterium. I go by Tommy. My brother goes by Eric.
Hey, yo.
We are the Brothers Mysterium, and we are the number one commercial-free paranormal podcast in the universe. Thanks to everybody out there rating and reviewing us on iTunes and any other podcast provider you may use. And thanks to everybody interacting with us on social media. Twitter at Mysterium Bros, Instagram at Mysterium Bros, Facebook.com/TheBrothersMysterium, of course, emailing us, TheBrothersMysterium@gmail.com, and going to TheBrothersMysterium.com. And as you may have listened to our previous episode, The Lizzie Borden House, we discussed the paranormal going-ons in the home where the murders took place, but there was another mystery afoot.
That's right.
In a different home. The Mysterium childhood home, where a magnet from the Lizzie Borden house mysteriously appeared, and we had no idea why it was there. And it turns out, Eric, that you are not the only member of the family to spend some time at the Lizzie Borden house. Oh no, someone spent more time there than even you in the one night you were there, and that is none other than Father Mysterium.
Indeed it is.
And you sat down with him and got to the bottom of not only where that magnet came from, but his own experiences in the Lizzie Borden home.
The Brothers Mysterium.
So when you and I spoke on the phone the other day, you said you were surprised that neither Tom and I knew the origin of the magnet.
Yes.
Because you had listened to the episode and heard us say we had no idea where it came from.
Right, right.
And then you had...
And I thought that you guys knew that I had brought the magnet home. Because of my computer work when I worked in Brooklyn, I did like computer address label software for small newspapers. So besides Brooklyn, I worked pretty regularly in Providence, Rhode Island, Fall River, Massachusetts, Boston. So I was all sort of up in that southern Massachusetts area. And when I started working at the paper in Fall River, we had to go down to their printing plant and talk about how do you want the labels laid out, how do you want them delivered. So you had to really coordinate that with the printer. You know, how many did he want? One up, two up, four up? How what kind of paper did he want it on? So it would work perfectly with his press and his labeler. So I went up there and I met with them. And I used to do that. I used to do a fair amount of travel back and forth to New England. And I get there and I met them at their office. And they said, oh, we're going to go meet our printer. We'll go down there. So we drive down and we pull up in front of this old house. There was sort of a dreary looking building. And they said, yeah, this is where Larry Press is. We'll go around back. And by the way, this is the Lizzie Borden house. Now, I had heard the Lizzie Borden story.
Right.
But it was like, what do you mean the Lizzie Borden house? And they were, well, this is where she supposedly killed her parents, where she lived.
Regardless, it's where they died, whether she killed them or
and
not,
her parents
that's where
died
they died.
Yes, yeah. that's right. And so behind the house, what was at one point probably like a shed or maybe a small barn or maybe like a carriage house, that was the office. And then behind that, they had built a much bigger sort of barn where they actually had the printing press. And that was amazing because it looked like an old barn. And you went in through a door, and it was just, I always remember it like being unbelievably bright, painted white inside. It was a very clean printing press. It was amazing. Ron was the guy who was like the foreman, the owner, the general manager there.
Owned the Lizzie Borden house.
He owned the house and the printing plant. Right. He owned Larry Press. And so he was one of the partners, from what I understood. And so then, you know, they'd say, oh, well, come in the house, we'll make coffee. And the house was really creepy, I thought. I mean, and they had sort of been in the process. They had restored it, they said. It had been through a lot of changes over the years. It was like one of those places that just, the aura of it was creepy. As soon as you walked in, there was like, sort of like a musty, stale odor. And here they said, well, you know, it's not the original furniture. This is new furniture, and we carpeted and we've painted. But even outside, the building was sort of like a dark green to black, or a dark green with black trim, and it was dreary. You know, it was really amazing how, like, what a creepy place. And you just felt, and I never experienced anything there where I would say, oh, you know, this is, you know, I heard noises, but I was never in the building alone either. But it was the kind of thing where you also just sort of felt like, I got to get out of here. You know, it was like...
Just a tense vibe, right?
Yeah, it was really, really interesting. And so the story of the magnet is that I went someplace in Fall River, and I remember buying the magnet. And the other thing I bought was, I was in a restaurant having lunch with them, and there was a sketch on the wall of the steamboat Fall River going under the Brooklyn Bridge. It would come up the East River or come down the East River from the Long Island Sound and then dock in Lower Manhattan. And then would go back up the East River and Long Island Sound and back to Fall River. And they, so they had this sketch of it under the Brooklyn Bridge, and you could see some of the Brooklyn skyline. And I said, oh, that's great. I work in those neighborhoods. And I said to the guy, you know, don't ever throw that painting out if you want to get rid of it. It was really a sketch. And he said, I'll sell it to you right now. How about $35? I said, with the frame? And he was like, oh, of course.
So not bad.
I bought it. And they sat there. I remember them sitting there looking at me saying, I can't believe you did that. Like, you just
bought that.
Made the guy an offer and bought the picture right off the wall.
That's right.
Interesting.
See, here we go. That just ran out.
Very
stored good. Full.
So that was Father Mysterium, our father, of course, telling his time there. And number one, always good when we can close a loophole, when we can solve a mystery. So we now know the origin of the magnet.
Right.
And we also now know Father Mysterium spent quite a lot of time there, and very cool. He said it had a creepy aura, the building itself, the house where the murders took place. It had a I got to get the hell out of here type of vibe to it. But I like that he potentially spent time in the old barn, the same barn we mentioned twice in our episode. First, when Lizzie told her friend, if you'll recall, Alice Russell, that there was like a shady, creepy guy lurking around. And, you know, he's been hanging out the house in broad daylight and hanging around the barn. And later, with her supposedly fake alibi, where she said, well, at the time my father was killed, I was out in the back barn looking for lead to make some fishing anchors. And if you recall, the police went and looked, and the hay dust was completely settled, no footprints, no disturbances. So Father Mysterium very well could have been in that barn, assuming that barn was where the printing press was. Although he said there's also the office was like a shed. So one of those, at some point, might have been the barn.
Yeah.
But a cool connection that we did not even know about.
Well, he was in the house, too, he said.
He definitely was in the house as well. Yeah, that's where he said it had that creepy feel to it, which is interesting.
And the thing is, yeah, because it wasn't set up to resemble the Lizzie Borden house at that time. It was just a house, because it had changed over and people had done repairs and things like that. So even still, no matter how hard they tried, they could not mask that air of death that just lingers in that home.
Yeah, and we've said it before, some places, whether you know the legend or not, you just kind of step inside of a building or an area and you just kind of get hit with this weird vibe. Yeah, something's a little off here. Something went down. And also,
it was a little murdery.
Little bit of murderiness in the air. Also, some interesting kind of history and just backstory on like the area and the scandal and the people. And it's interesting that it wasn't really discussed. They were kind of, I mean, now obviously it's a huge tourist attraction and everything. But at the time, he was saying it was kind of like a hush-hush thing. They right. didn't brag about the murders. The locals weren't like, hey, you must be here for the murder house. You know, they were
right, yeah.
playing it low-key, which is sort of the opposite of when you went to Point Pleasant, West Virginia, for our Mothman episode, where everybody was like, let me tell you about the Mothman, and people were excited about it, and it's part of the town history.
Right.
A little more subdued here, so that's interesting, probably because the families were so close-knit, and the Bordens were kind of high rollers in the area.
And that's the thing I had said to Father Mysterium, too, is that in the cemetery, there are so many Bordens, And at that point in the 80s and the 90s, you're really only talking like three or four generations, possibly, depending, like give or take, removed from when that happened. So, like, you know, it's almost like our great grandfather was born soon after that. So that's yeah. only, it's only going back, you know, a couple generations. So
it was pretty fresh, and yeah, definitely very heinous to have a daughter kill both parents, allegedly. And with so many Bordens in the house, I'm surprised they don't call it a boarding house. Borden house? Boarding house?
Hey. Well, okay.
Lizzie may not have murdered her parents, but I definitely murdered that pun. And we're back. And speaking of being back, a lot of our loyal listeners commented they loved the episode, they thought it was great, but there were a lot of going-ons in the house with while Ashley was there, while you were there, and while Megan was there, and we did not do our usual sort of analysis and dissection, at least not as part of that episode, but a lot of people want to know, hey, what did you guys think of that boom she heard? Hey, what were Eric's thoughts when this happened? What's up with Megan possibly being killed by her boyfriend who was, she believes, possessed by the angry spirit of Mr. Borden? So, we're going to share our thoughts with the listeners now.
So yeah, initially we had recorded our kind of analysis of the situation, but the episode kind of ran extremely long with all that included. So I figured during the editing process, it was better to kind of just present the story as it was, because in terms of, you know, the analysis, it just, yeah, there was a lot going on, and it was just too much all at once. But the listeners wanted it, so we are now going to play what we had recorded when we had originally listened to those stories.
So that was Ashley's account of her time at the Lizzie Borden house, mainly waiting, drinking. She did say it was a great tour. She appreciated the history of the home. And that made me realize, like, it is weird history in general to, like, really stop and be like, this was their home. Like, people lived here. Like, it becomes a story and almost too abstract. Like, Lizzie Borden killed her family. Oh, it's a funny song. But right. It's like, those are real people. They really lived and died in that house. So it was a house. It's not a museum. A
place waiting to be a museum.
Right.
It was a house.
It's not like this is a fun little spooky adventure. It's like, no, they lived every day of their lives there till they moved out or were killed. And they were killed in that spot. So that is a crazy thing when you really think about the humanity behind the history. But she did not have a paranormal encounter. I will say, a little bit lame that her friends went to the third floor and went exploring and she did not go.
Yeah.
And then they heard the loud bang and they were texting. If you're there, you're there to see something, to witness something. Get up and go. Walk around. Get scared.
Now, the loud bang, I may have an explanation for.
I thought you might. We'll get to that.
Okay.
But overall, she did not have anything paranormal happen. She said it was fun. It was spooky. It was creepy. It's what she wanted. It was educational. She's into crime and history, so that was cool. But she did admit, even though nothing happened and there was no psychic there, which could have made it more fun and interesting, she said there was something, a presence, an energy there, but she did not see anything supernatural. But perhaps our next guest, Megan, did. So that was Megan from the Boogie Down Bronx, sharing her story of her time at the Lizzie Borden house. A much different experience than Ashley and her friends had. We have a lot going on here.
Yeah.
Starting in the basement where the burning of the dress supposedly happened, where there is a skull on the wall. There is a photo that Megan shared with us. We will share it with you on Instagram. Our Instagram handle is at Mysterium Bros. We'll also throw it on Facebook, facebook.com/TheBrothersMysterium. So there is sort of that skull face, which we'll talk about shortly. They also had the seance, which was, she said it kind of seemed rehearsed, but what was shocking, at least to me, was the psychic, whoever it was, claiming that the father was molesting Emma and Lizzie. Abby knew about it, and that's why, together, Lizzie and Emma planned it all, possibly with the uncle involved, to kill Andrew Borden. Seems I've never heard that before from anywhere else. Almost seems like defamation of a soul.
Yeah.
Like a dead person to kind of accuse that.
Right. And it goes back to what I was saying. I mean, even though, you know, well, like you were saying about the house in general and how it's just a museum now. But when you think about it, it really is a house where people lived.
Yeah.
Lizzie Borden was an actual real person. And just like I said about mediumship way back when, is it's kind of messed up to like, if you are faking this, which in this case, I'm going to go ahead and say she probably was, because it sounded from the account that
Megan,
told us, it was very rehearsed.
Yes.
I have heard that theory before, but it's like messed up to like, be like, yeah, I'm receiving this information from that person and they're telling me this is what happened. Like it's,
yeah, it's just kind of icky.
It is. Yeah.
But hey, whatever.
Gotta make a buck, right?
Yeah, I guess maybe it is just kind of a shock and awe tactic. You're there. This is why it happened. Kind of right. Adds to the motivation of it all.
What's the harm? Who's Lizzie Borden's dead? You know what I mean?
Like, yeah, they're nobody, all dead. Nobody can verify or deny.
It's not like you're saying I was on the phone with so-and-so last night and they told me they're being, you know.
Yeah, there's no one to prove it or disprove it.
It's a victimless crime to lie about that kind of stuff, I suppose you could say.
Indeed it is. But is it truly when we're tainting the reputation of someone? Who knows? Maybe he did. We don't know. Anyway, she does. Megan says the house was scary. She said, I grew up in a haunted house, but this house had a different vibe, kind of freaked her out, which she did admit could have just been her own apprehension as to going there, which we always say it's kind of half in your mind when you go somewhere. I think the best thing to do, if you ever, here's a Mysterium tip. If you have a house that you believe to be haunted, invite people over and don't tell them you think it's haunted and see if they say to you, hey, there's a weird vibe here. There's this. Because if before people show up, you say, my house is haunted.
Right.
This person was killed by a scorned lover in the attic. Then people are going to go, I'm not going in the attic. There, I can, well, it's creepy.
You've planted the thought.
Yeah, if you don't say anything, see if they figure it out. But anyway, she said this house had a different vibe altogether. She then is in bed watching Odd Choice Legally Blonde.
Yeah, not really what
kind
I
kind of
be.
A mood killer.
Yeah, doesn't fit the vibe.
I mean, I guess Reese Witherspoon could be a little scary, but come on. But anyway, that's when she starts kind of feeling these weird vibrations. She's probably like, oh, it's probably my boyfriend, but then they get weirder. And then the doorknob starts rattling for about 5 minutes, which is a long-ass time.
That is a really long time, yeah.
And she says if it wasn't for the hook lock, the door would have swung open, and they're watching it. And then he wakes up, and they're both watching, and finally he gets up, and he's like, ah, it's fine. Flips the lock, and the door stops rattling.
And the room was empty on the other side, correct?
No one was out there.
Right.
So then he has some fun, uses the Tommy Mysterium trademark tactic of yelling at the spirit, trying to aggravate it and annoy it, which they were warned not to do by the person who worked there, who said they had done it once and they had their hair pulled and such. But he says to the dad, what are you, a all of a sudden,
oof.
Light went on. And she said it was sort of a weird type of light switch that wouldn't just flick on by itself. So she's spooked. Then, short while later, they hear a man and woman arguing. These voices are getting more and more aggressive. She thinks it's coming from the bedroom behind them that no one is in, the other side of the wall. She opens the door, says she could still hear it. Again, she admits like it could have been other people staying there because there were other people maybe upstairs, whatever. But she did think it was coming from this empty room. So quite a lot of things happening already. Then, to add to the madness, at 3:31, interesting to note, not at 3 a.m.
Which is the usual witching hour.
Correct. Or even 3:33, like the repeating
right.
Ghost spirits seem to like that. But 3:31, whatever, she wakes up with this panicked, super scared, gotta get out of this house, terrified feeling. So she does what anyone would do, which is wake up your significant other, who gets awake, but is sort of has this crazed, deranged, angry look on his face, calls her the C word. He says, shut your mouth and go to sleep. Stop being a baby. I'm going to throw you out the window. And then he goes right back to sleep. I guess we know why that's her ex-boyfriend. Good golly.
Right.
Miss Molly. And I don't know if that's, I'm thinking to myself, is that like a possession? What would that even be?
Or is it just that, you know, certain people, you wake them up and they turn into assholes.
Yeah, maybe he's always an asshole. Yeah, some people are just dicks.
Could very well be.
Nothing paranormal about that. But, a twist, She's outside the next day, wakes up. She's frazzled from all these experiences, wants to leave. She's outside, smoking a cigarette, hacking a butt, as people do. There's another woman there who was also a guest, and they just start chatting. And she says, hey, last night was crazy. This happened. I woke up at 3:31. I did this. My boyfriend was being a jerk. And then this woman says, that's so weird. I woke up at 3:31. I was freaked out and panicked. I woke up my husband, who said, I will slit your throat.
Okay.
Then I just go back to a Tommy Mysterium classic, Ghostivation. Whose spirit is so violent and apparently hates women so much? Why is it? Is it like, it almost seems like maybe it's Lizzie, who's the only killer, the only violent one who had ever lived there. But why would she be? She wasn't like,
right.
She had one outburst where she murdered two people, which is not good, but she wasn't like this menacing, evil person who is always threatening people. That doesn't match. Andrew, I don't think, from what we know of him, assuming he was not a child molester, was violent and angry.
Right. The other ghosts are supposedly children, who I assume,
right,
from what I've heard, are playful, not
playful.
You know, there's nothing playful about slitting someone's throat.
Abby didn't get along with Lizzie, but she was not violent or angry or threatening, from what I gather. So
is it more likely the coincidence of there are
two
assholes?
That's staying. What I think it might be. Yeah. And then Megan says, perhaps, she kind of buys into the theory that Lizzie and Emma were scared of their father. So maybe the women wake up with this panic, scared feeling, and the men take on the sort of abusive, angry energy of the dad.
Right.
Which I guess if you're believing the psychic who said he was sort of like evil to them and abused them, maybe physically or sexually or whatever, I guess it kind of fits, but I don't know if I truly believe that. And the only way to really know would be to talk to a man who spent the night there and see if he became an asshole.
Right.
And lucky for us, you are that asshole. I mean, you are that man.
Indeed I am. And I also happen to be there with my significant other.
Well, didn't that work out mysteriously perfectly?
So, yeah, in this case, I'd happen to be the case study, I suppose you'd say.
So, why don't you take us through what your experience was like there?
Can take some thinking now. So, well, first of all, it was an interesting concept to think of this place as a bed and breakfast, because you go there and there's all these pictures of dead bodies hanging up that have been mutilated, and they tell you about who was killed in what room, and this room's haunted, and this room is that. But at the same time, these people are running a bed and breakfast, and they want you to be comfortable when you're sleeping there. So that's kind of a really hard...
Kind of an oxymoron.
It's a tough dichotomy to merge those two, you know? It's like a Venn diagram that really doesn't
Venn.
Yeah, doesn't Venn too well. I don't remember what time we got there, but I remember, you know, I was very excited. I was hanging out the window of the car, filming. The house it stands out when you first see it. It's got some nice green siding.
We do have a video we put together from the footage that you shot during your time there, which will be probably on all our social media, but definitely on youtube.com/TheBrothersMysterium.
For sure. First thing I ran into when we had, you know, booked it in advance, we booked the John Morris room, which you brought the interesting point of John Morris. The room's named after him, but he only stayed there one night.
Yes.
And it was actually the mother-in-law that was killed in that room. But first thing I run into when I get out of the car is a black cat.
Meow.
Always good. I'm trying to remember what the black cat's name was. He was like the resident cat. It was like Hatchet or something like that. He had some cute, you know, Lizzie Borden related
creepy,
name.
Cute name. That is kind of a cool name for a
cat. So that was cool. So we went in and we met the caretakers and all that. And, you know, you go up, you put your stuff in the room. Kind of when, you know, it started to get towards nighttime, the caretakers actually leave. So they don't stay there in the house with you. So there's probably about two to three of them at one time kind of overseeing the house. They give you the tour, which I wasn't allowed to record the tour. I tried, but they said no, which I get that totally. So didn't record any of the tour. So after the tour, they leave. They leave the house. And the people who are staying there for the night are the people who are there for the night.
How many people would you say were there the night you were there?
Maybe about 10 to 12.
Oh, full house.
It was a pretty packed night.
Literally, was Little Michelle and DJ Tanner there as well?
They were not.
Let's hope Gibbler didn't show up. That's one ghost you can't get rid of.
Yeah, Uncle Jesse was there, though.
They're full house jokes, people.
Yeah. But anyway, so there's about 12 people there. So the caretakers leave. So you're in the house by yourself. So you pretty much have a free run of the house. I mean, granted, there are other people staying in their rooms, and in a hotel, you wouldn't just walk into someone else's room. So you try to be as respectful as possible. I did, however, at one point when every guest was settled down in the parlor or the room where Mr. Borden had been murdered on the couch, I you know, tell everyone I have a podcast. Is anyone uncomfortable with me recording? And on the flip side, does anyone want to be interviewed? So I did get to interview a few people, and I think we have clips of that. Some people were skeptics. Some people were not. Some people had been to the house before and had experiences. Definitely a mixed bag. One thing which I know I've mentioned before quite recently in the Ouija board episodes was the Ouija boards that they had in the living room, which I was immediately like, yeah, let's bust out this Ouija board. And this one lady freaked out on me, and she was like yelling at me not to touch the Ouija board.
As we also addressed in the Ouija board episode, some people are so freaked out and paranoid and against them that it's almost irritating.
Right. Like this lady,
like,
made it sound like, I don't know, there was a gas leak in the house and I was threatening to light a match. Like, that's how she was acting about it. And it was ironic too, because her husband was kind of like this laid back, like, yeah, don't care, don't believe in ghosts. So
classic. Opposites attract. God bless them.
I wonder if that guy was a dick.
It might have been.
But anyway, nighttime came, and most people went to bed, and I ended up staying up late with these two girls that I had met there. And we ended up kind of walking around the house at night, going to any room that was available. Oh, actually, first, let me wind back a little bit. So we're all in the living room together, and I've said this before, too. But
so wait, you did not break out the Ouija boards?
No, I did not break out the Ouija board.
Okay.
No. Yeah, Ouija board was not touched. I respected that lady's wishes and decided not to touch it. So anyway, then, as I said, all the guests that were there for the night were in that room. All of a sudden, we hear footsteps upstairs. Everyone runs to the center of the room, except for me, who I ran over to the stairs, flew upstairs immediately, and was super excited and like darted out into the hall and like literally leapt out in front of this woman who was a little startled.
But I just like to say that is the Mysterium way. Run towards it.
Oh, yeah.
If you're there, if you want to know, if you're intrigued enough to go to a haunted place, stick around for the haunting.
Right.
Don't get scared. Don't run away. It's life-changing. If you had seen Abby Borden floating there and then she dissolved, you would no longer need to have any skepticism. You would know a ghost was real.
Oh, I mean, my heart probably would have stopped, but I would have...
But it would have been awesome.
Right, and I would have done everything I could in my power to document that, too.
But always run towards it. Don't run away. If you can. That's the Mysterium way, is the run into the danger. Anyway, so this poor woman, you jump out of the staircase and scare the crap out of her.
And first thing she says is, you know, not a ghost. Sorry, just got here late. And I was like, damn. So I went downstairs and everyone's kind of like, what'd you see? We heard voices. And I was like, just some lady who got here late. No big deal. Interesting on the running away part of it. Well, I'll get to that running away thing later, actually. So we were walking around the house at night. My wife, who was my fiance at the time, had gone to bed early, actually, in the John Morse room, which is where the stepmother was murdered. And I do have a photo of my wife laying on the floor in the exact spot where she was murdered, because my wife likes doing creepy things like that.
That's cute.
Yep. So anyway, we kind of went room to room and we tried doing like EVP sessions and doing whatever we could to get a ghost. Nothing really happened. There was a point where one girl claimed that she felt something grab her ankle, I believe, while we were sitting on a couch together in the main parlor. At that point, I think it was late. It was dark. There is a road not too far away where definitely the lights of the cars passing by would kind of reflect in the mirrors and like the furniture. Like, you know, there's like cases with like fine china and things like that in it. So there were definitely like these creepy kind of reflections moving back all night.
Was Hatchet the cat roaming the house at night?
He was not. He was actually, I think, outside. I did not see the cat inside.
Okay.
Or I think they may have had an area like where like they make the food and things like that, like an off limits area that they lock up where he may stay.
Yeah, but he wasn't. We can count him out as having touched her ankle making sounds throughout the house.
The cat was not in the house.
Okay, the cat is off the suspect list.
The cat is off the suspect list.
For meow.
Then eventually the girls went to bed, and I ended up staying up by myself for a little bit. So I walk down to the basement in pitch darkness, where actually there's a camera that films 24/7, I believe, like a live feed. I thought about reaching out to people to say, like, hey, check out the live feed on the Lizzie Borden website. I'm down there right now. But I didn't. Nothing happened while I was down there. While I was in the basement, though, I did recall the story that the tour guide told me about how the Ghost Adventures crew, which I believe Zach Bagans.
Yeah, Bagans or Baggins.
Forefronts that. She had told me that they had run out of there terrified at about 3 a.m, which was about the time I was down there by myself, left all their gear behind, and actually sent their producers to pick it up the next day, would not return to the house.
Wow. You outlasted the ghost hunters.
Indeed, I did. But yeah, nothing really happened.
While you were in the basement, might I ask if you saw the skull on the wall that Megan talked about and had a picture of?
So the way the skull thing works is you kind of take a photo of the wall like she did.
Yes.
So, and what happens is when the flash of your camera goes off for like a brief instance, I guess it would sort of like pareidolia, I guess, like your mind kind of in that brief flash will take what ash is on the wall and kind of your brain says, oh, it looks like a skull. You know what right. I'm saying? But that's it. That was really it. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, nothing other than that. The next day I got up early and I kind of just walked around the house. Went to bed, nothing happened.
Had a good sleep.
Yeah, it was actually very comfortable. Woke up the next morning and was totally polite to my wife. We had no
argument. I was going
to
ask that too. She did not wake up at 3:31.
Nope.
She did not feel scared or panicked at any point during the evening.
No.
You did not threaten to violently throw her out a window, slit her throat, kill her, beat her up anywhere, call her any bad names.
Nope.
Okay.
Nope. Not at all. In fact, I was probably extra careful about getting into bed quietly, as I did not want it to disrupt her, because I'm considerate in that way.
Interesting.
Anyway, I got up in the morning early. I was probably the first one up. I was walking around the house just getting some kind of shots that we could use on the Instagram and the, you know, any social media sites and things like that. And going back to that slam from earlier, the thing I did notice was at one point, the door to my room, as I had exited my room, opened slowly on its own. And I was like, what the hell?
Creepy.
And I knew my wife was sleeping at the time, and I was the only one up in the house. So I walked up and I did it again. And it turns out that the floor, or however the door was originally put in, is it's must be slightly pitched in some way, where the door just naturally, gravity does its work, and the door naturally opens up on its own. And I believe if you let it go for far enough, it will slam into the wall.
I believe that you got video of that.
I did, yes.
Which we will include in our YouTube and
yeah,
other videos we post.
Yeah. Oh, another thing, this is going to be a little out of sequence, so I'll just, when I edit it, I'll throw it in there. When I was with those girls, we went up into the room where the children supposedly haunt, the ones that were the victims of Andrew Borden's uncle's wife about 20 years before the Lizzie Borden murder. And there's like toys up there and books. And apparently if you read the books, you play with the toys, you can kind of entice the ghosts of these children to come out. Again, I think the girls sat there while I was the one sitting there playing with the toys, probably looking like a jackass. But I was doing everything in my power to get a ghost, like Tommy said. When you're there, that's what you should be doing.
That's why you're there.
Right. People are always like, oh, that's crazy. You go to these places and you actually run towards it when there's a ghost? Of course I do. Why? No, I want to know. And I want to see. But nothing happened significant. It was a great place. I highly recommend staying there. I'd like to do it again sometime, actually. You can actually rent out the entire house, I believe, for a pretty modest price. It's like $1,200 or something like that.
Really? Yeah,
so maybe we'll do a stay with the Brothers Mysterium at the Lizzie Borden House event.
Yeah, not a bad idea. If you would like to stay with the Brothers Mysterium at the Brothers Mysterium Lizzie Borden Retreat, email us at thebrothersmysterium@gmail.com and we will set it up and you can be on the episode with us.
Yeah, but if you wake up in the morning and you act like an asshole, we will ask you to leave.
Yes. Or if you sleep at all. Right. Well, like I said, like maybe like 5 a.m. you can go to sleep or something, but...
Yeah, I don't know. But I mean, all in all, it was... Again, it's one of those cool places where history always seems to be tied in with supernatural events.
Yes.
Particularly in a place where there's death, like Gettysburg is, you know, a big ghost spot.
Yeah, especially untimely deaths, murders, right. And especially a very famous one where a daughter allegedly killed her parents.
Yeah. So, yeah, I didn't experience anything, but it was my first time kind of going around with strangers in a very famously haunted place and being able to really open my mind up to it and kind of say, you know, if something's going to happen, I want it to happen. And I tried to break all the rules to make that happen. I didn't do any taunting because I didn't want to yell too loud and wake anybody up. But yeah.
So final question for you.
Sure.
Both Ashley and Megan said upon entering the house and staying there, they felt a weird energy. It was definitely haunted. There was a presence. Did you feel that as well?
Yes, but not that I say it was definitely haunted or there was a presence, but there definitely was, from my perspective, this excitement about where you know it's a famous house. And of course, when you think it's haunted, and again, I've never had a ghost experience. I wouldn't say I believe in ghosts, but I'm always looking for that moment where it might potentially happen. So there is that little part in me that's like, keep in mind,
yeah,
there could be something here.
And I guess even just any place where there's been like a murder, it has that vibe of like, right, oh wow, something did happen here. So just knowing that,
right,
you enter it with your own,
yeah,
and bias before even getting there.
Yeah, so definitely the seed was planted in my mind, but I wouldn't say that I definitely felt 100% like there was something watching me. So.
Well, that is the Brothers Mysterium take on Lizzie Borden and the Lizzie Borden House. So, as always, what the listeners want, we provide. So, there was our originally unreleased discussion about all of the events that took place for these three individuals at the Lizzie Borden Bed and Breakfast. You asked for it, you got it. The Brothers Mysterium are always listening. We're always here for you to give you what you want.
Just always reviewing what we say on the show and things like that, just making sure things are accurate. And I listen back to the episode, and there's a point where you're talking about the trial and how they removed the flesh from the skulls of the two Borden parents that had been murdered, and they fit this axe handle into it. And then I interject with, which they did right there on the dining room table, which is actually correct in a way. So, Tom, you were talking about the trial, and I kind of, in my excitement, got confused. When I said they did it on the dining room table, what happened was, after the murders, they took the photos of Mr. and Mrs. Borden where they had been murdered, and then they had carried their bodies into the dining room and laid them on the dining room table and done the initial forensic autopsy there. So that's where the dining room table comes in. I incorrectly inserted that into your story about the trial just because, I don't know, I was feeling it.
Sometimes you get a good dissection of your parents on the dining room table and you just got to blurt it out.
That's right. Yeah. I mean,
but we always correct ourselves. So thank you for putting that in the correct chronological order.
Yeah.
So if you have a place that you know or believe to be haunted, you think it's worth us going, checking out, spending the night, or you have a completely irrelevant but yet paranormal or supernatural topic you want us to discuss on the show, we will be happy to do it. You just got to let us know. How do you do that? Hit us up at Mysterium Bros, Twitter and Instagram, facebook.com/TheBrothersMysterium. Email us, TheBrothersMysterium@gmail.com, or head on over to TheBrothersMysterium.com and shoot us a message.
All right.